just after 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning, and that must mean it's time again for Money Management with Opus 111 Group's Mike Mayo. Here's Mike.
Hi, good morning. Welcome to another episode of our Money Management program. We are your antidote to conventional investment wisdom. My name is Mike Mayo. I'm with the Opus 111 Group. We're here to offer you another hour of financial news, a recap of what's been happening in the markets and economy during the past week, and, most important, how it all can affect you and your investments. In today's program, we'll be talking about some of the various tidbits I've just picked up from my reading over the past week, looking at some of the economic reports that came out, talk with you about the Fed decisions that were made during the weekend, as well as revisit some of these bank issues. Right now, I want to just get to the closing values as of the market close yesterday. The Dow ended with a gain of 132 points to 32,237. S&P was higher at 3,970. NASDAQ up at 11,823. Russell 2000 at 1,729. Gold settled at 1980 an ounce. Silver at 2,328 an ounce. Crude at 69.22 a barrel, 10-year Treasury at 3.37%, and soft white wheat was last quoted at $7.56 a bushel. Well, we had a bunch of things come off this week with the Fed and what have you, but as I say, I want to get to you some of these little bits and pieces that you may find interesting regarding, well, just things in general as well as the marketplace. WalletHub came out with the list of 10 most expensive states to retire in. And in the top 10, number one was New York, no surprise there. But number six, Washington, and number 10, Oregon. So I guess you better move. That's it. Anyhow, that's what WalletHub had to say. As far as, I bet this may surprise some folks, as far as year-to-date is concerned, the NASDAQ is up 13%, and the S&P up 3.4%, and the aggregate bond index up 2.4%. To me, that doesn't exactly suggest that the markets are too caught up in all this regional and Swiss bank stuff all that much. Now, Thursday, we came back from a 500-point loss in the Dow as the investors were betting that the Fed was done hiking interest rates. excuse me. The Todd Sohn, who is a strategist at Strategus, he said in a note to his clients this past week that Apple and Microsoft together now account for more than 13% of the entire S&P 500 index. That's a 30-year high. And both stocks have outperformed so far this year. A lot of that has been due to our recent dropping of interest rates because the tech shares do better with interest rates lower than higher. Now, it's also easy to say, as this adage is kind of out there, that as Apple goes, so goes the market. Well, Apple's market value all by itself currently tops the S&P 500 at $2.51 trillion with a T. And Microsoft is number two at a mere $2.06 trillion. So pretty heavy duty in those first two slots. And Apple's trading above its 50-day moving average, its 200-day moving average, and those are signs of momentum that the chartists like to see, who suggest that that it could continue. Now, while the financial sector has suffered in March, Apple almost 8% higher for the month. Its year-to-date gained around 22%, more than Alphabet, Amazon, and Microsoft. So, again, doing well. Another little bit of random information that I'm sure you'll be glad to know, that if, you know, there's this talk out there, well, it seems to me as long as I've been doing this, about let's tax all the rich people and use all their money to support whatever we're doing. Well, there was a study done that if somehow those people were to confiscate all the wealth of the billionaires, all it would do was keep the government going for 10 months. 10 months, that's it. And after that, there's no other source of money. So I don't know. I don't think that's going to be a good thing going forward. So You may have heard that taxes are due on the 18th of April this year, and according to this, the average U.S. household can expect to pay $11,000 in Fed income tax. On top of that, they'll pay state and local taxes in many states, and some will pay much more than others, depending on where they live. Now, excuse me, the report did look at the various taxes in all 50 states and D.C., and they found that even in some states with no income tax, residents do have to dig deep to pay other taxes. For example, let's take Washington. Residents pay no income tax but spend 8.7% of their annual income on sales and excise taxes, which is the highest rate among all states. And speaking of Washington taxes, I don't know if you read or heard this, but in a 7-2 decision in the case of Chris Quinn versus the state of Washington, the Washington Supreme Court determined that a capital gains tax is a valid excise tax under Washington law. Now, in 2021, the legislature had passed a 7% tax on the sale of stocks, bonds, businesses, and other investments if profits exceeded $250,000 annually. They do have exceptions from the sale of real estate, livestock, and family-owned businesses. Now, to me, this is just silly. But, they say, well, we didn't want the lower-income people to be affected by this. Well, I'm assure you that they wouldn't be affected by a tax such as this, and it seems to me just another way to create revenue for the state to support various and sundry programs of indeterminate benefit. That's an editorial comment, by the way. Ah, yes, gold. I'm on the record as being an anti-gold bug, and I have not changed my spots in that regard. But prices of gold this last Monday did go break through $2,000 to hit the highest point since March of 2022. And just to remind you, it settled the week at $1,980. Now, its all-time what they call nominal high was in August of 2020, when it traded at 2,075. What they mean by nominal high is the number. That was the highest number that gold had ever traded at. However, if you adjust it for inflation, it has still not passed the high point it hit in 1982. So to me, that doesn't make it exactly an inflation hedge. Now, Fitch Solutions wrote in a report dated the 20th of this month that, and I'm quoting, "We believe the mounting of global financial instability is likely to drive gold prices toward its all-time high in the coming weeks," unquote. And again, rates, interest rates affect the price. And here recently, we've seen the interest rates drop. So that's been a benefit for gold prices. But you got to be pretty light on your feet in order to make money in this because it trades all over the dang place. So, and again, pays no dividend, pays no interest. I have no interest. There's many better ways, in my opinion, to adjust portions of your portfolio to deal with inflation. But that's all I'm going to say about that. So there. Switching to the economy, it says here that Amazon's laying off 9,000 more folks in the coming weeks. That's from their CEO. That's on top of the previously announced layoffs that began in November. This round will primarily affect their cloud computing, human resources, advertising, and Twitch live streaming businesses. So not exactly across the board. See, this too is a function of when we had lower interest rates, and also has bled over into some of these banks. Well, low interest rates, low cost of capital, let's hire a lot of folks, let's do a lot of stuff. And now when we're moving back closer to what our reality numbers in terms of interest rates, et cetera, they're basically having to unwind what they did. Nationally, changing subjects, nationally, the initial jobless claims ex unexpectedly moved lower than expected last week. So that shows the labor market remains extremely tight. Most of these layoffs in the tech sector are basically just a little blip in the national average. So there's not much carry for it. Although if you're in the inflation and, excuse me, tech sector, you know exactly what the how would I say, looking over your shoulder to see if my job is still there situation is not a comfortable place to be in. So let's talk about the inflation rate right now. Currently, according to the U.S. Labor Department, the annual inflation rate for the 12 months ending in January was 6.4%. That was down from the 9.6% that was the case in June of 22. Now, if you use something called the rule of 72, which is a way to determine mathematically how long it'll take something to double in price, it basically means that 6.4% inflation is going to see your prices double from this level every 11.2 years. So that's tough for retirees and anybody whose salary isn't going to be doubling every 11.2 years. And over a 30-year retirement, that would be expensive if you didn't allow for it. So basically, you know, 30-year retirement, you're talking about things going up once, well, up twice, and then twice again, and then a little bit more after that. So once again, the case for putting everything in the so-called safe investments of just bonds or CDs or whatever like that, it isn't going to work for you because, no, I'm not suggesting that inflation would stay at these levels because the average going back to 1926 in the U.S. has been 3% annually. I don't know that we could ever pick out a year where it was 3%, but that is the average. So it has been lower. But of course, as we know, it has been higher as well. So the point is, within your portfolio, you need to have some allowance for inflation protection. Changing gears, we're going to hit this real estate topic just fairly quickly. Previously owned homes, existing home sales, if you will, rose 14.5% in February compared to January. That's the first monthly gain in a year and the largest increase since July 2020. So higher mortgage rates have been putting downward pressure on home prices since last summer. And home prices were lower year over year for the first time in nearly 11 years in February. So that trend's good if you're a buyer. Perhaps if you're a seller, you may want to see if you can move something. In any case, those sales are based on closings. So the contracts were likely signed at the end of December and throughout January when the rates had fallen sharply. Now, the average rate in mortgages, this is according to Mortgage News Daily, is 6.67%. So it was as high as 7. So it's not that far off, but it is lower. Now, we do not have an oversupply of homes. For example, the month supply of homes, that in other words, how long it would take to sell your existing inventory, even with these slow sales paces, at 2.6 in February. The National Association of Realtors says that 5 is the number that suggests a more normal market. So despite lack of options, in other words, lack of available properties, homes that are put on the market are still selling quickly. 57% of them were on the market for less than a month. So while sales are clearly under pressure, this in no way, shape, or form is a repeat of the housing bust in from 2006 to whatever, 8, 11, however long it lasted. Now, new home sales rose for the third consecutive month in February. That suggests that sales activity may have hit a bottom. Now, however, even with this modestly positive trend, compared to a year ago, sales are still down 19%. Now, according to Bankrate, as of yesterday, as I said, the current average rate for a 30-year mortgage is 6.79. That's about a quarter of a percent lower than it was over the last week. Now, about those Federales. For a week and a half, I think, well, perhaps longer, but for sure a week and a half, we've been wondering just how the Fed would balance their competing fears of inflation and a bank panic. Now we know the answer. They made the announcement here Wednesday afternoon. Hike rates by a quarter point. That's what they did. Any more than that, and they would have gotten accused of being aloof to the risk of a bank run. But if they did nothing, they would have given the appearance of being more worried about banks than they've let on. So when in doubt, take the third way. Go down the middle. And stocks initially ticked higher after they raised rates because it was widely expected. But then it started flipping between a small rise and a small decline. And then fell in the last hour of trading. The S&P dropped 1.7% on the day. Now, a sharp drop in the regional banks also helped that, as well as comments from Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, who said the U.S. is currently not working on a blanket insurance for bank deposits. So I wouldn't read too much into the move of the market, that is, given that post-Fed moves generally come from day traders' models competing with one another. Now, I'm not talking about ladies running down the runway. I'm talking about their computer models and computer trading. They're all set up to buy and sell what they call baskets of stocks just automatically when they hit certain levels. That's why you see, and this is where a lot of this volatility comes from, because the traders are anticipating the up or the down. They're looking at the trend of the market and sell into it or buy into it as they see fit. And so you'll see the markets up 500, down 300, up for all in one day. Yet another reason why daily market activity is nowhere a good idea to use as a guideline for what you should do with your money. Now, the committee, and I'm talking about the Open Market Committee here, will closely monitor incoming information and assess the implications for monetary policy. Now, that's obviously not me talking. That was the Fed. And they said, the Fed said, they're calling for perhaps just one more interest rate hike this year. And at Wall Street Journal, they say that this latest Fed move will bring its Fed funds rate to a range between 4.75% and 5%. That's the highest level since September 2000. Mr. Powell said in his press conference on Wednesday that the Fed views inflation and bank turmoil as two separate challenges. He'll keep using rate increases and shrinking Fed balance sheet to tame the inflation, while on the other hand, relying on supervision and targeted intervention to stave off banking panics. That's probably the right message to send to markets to maintain the anti-inflation cred, while also trying to lift confidence that this current financial confusion is under control. Now, the officials also sent a hint, as I alluded to earlier, that they may be done raising interest rates soon. And a quote is, the committee anticipates some additional policy firming may be appropriate, unquote. They dropped a phrase used in their last eight statements that said the committee anticipated, quote, ongoing increases, unquote, in which rates would be appropriate. So the policy statement said it's too soon to tell if the recent banking stress would slow the economy. And again, I'm quoting, the U.S. banking system is sound and resilient. Recent developments are likely to result in tighter credit conditions for households and businesses and to weigh on economic activity, hiring, and inflation. The extent of these effects is uncertain. May I once again run up the certainty of uncertainty flag? That's the thing that runs throughout the market all the time, everywhere, any day, any place. So if you can be comfortable with not knowing exactly what's going to be happening and adjust your holdings accordingly to not be a better, B-E-T-T-O-R, then you'll probably do much better than if you did. Now, the Fed's likely now forecasting a recession starting later this year, even if it continues to say it won't cut rates later this year. excuse me. You put it all together, and we have a Fed prepared to not reduce rates as rapidly during the next recession as it did in 2008 and 2009. And the Fed went out of its way to end that portion of the statement with language that says it remains highly attentive to inflation risks. So the target range is, again, 4.75 to 5, highest in 15 years. And while this is widely expected, some folks had been expecting a 0.5% increase because inflation's still a problem. But to be fair, inflation has faded somewhat, and it still needs to improve. On the other hand, since the banking mess, some folks thought the Fed might leave rates unchanged at this meeting. I want to, I guess, address the latest bank stuff. I personally, I'm pretty tired of talking about all these banks because, now, this is my personal opinion. I think this is kind of overblown, putting it mildly. Now, the banks in question that we'll be talking about here. Yeah, they have problems for sure, but nothing like what we endured in 2008 and 2009. Not even close. But for instance, back in 2007, one bank that's been under radar lately, Credit Suisse, had a market cap of over $90 billion. It closed a week ago yesterday with a market cap of $5 billion. Now, you don't have to be a math guy to figure out that's down quite a bit. And at the end of last year, Credit Suisse had a balance sheet of $500 billion with 50,000 employees globally. Well, what the heck? How could a big bank like that, global bank, get in trouble? Well, their immediate problem was it was losing customers, and that created a liquidity crisis due to their withdrawals. Kind of makes sense. They're leaving. They take their money. Okay. And Credit Suisse had recently faced as much as a $10 billion daily customer outflow. That's a lot of money to be washing out the door. Now, that's according to the Wall Street Journal. Now, it didn't matter that the company had strong capital and liquidity levels according to measures favored by regulators going back to 2008. Now, here's something that, you know, kind of confuses the issue. Digital banking makes it way easier for customers to pull their money out, and digital communication, as we know, can magnify damage. Back in the day, J.P. Morgan, when there was a run on the banks, would have his tellers sit in the lobby, and when someone wanted to take out money, they would sit there and count it out, bill by bill. Now, you probably won't see that kind of thing happening in today's world because, you know, you get on the app, push the button, boom, money is transferred, gone, whatever. And so that makes things a little more confusing. So, and Credit Suisse's liquidity problems did start with the whisper circuit on social media last fall. And that eventually snowballed into, well, basically a self-fulfilling prophecy. So the sum of Credit Suisse's many issues did boil down to the fact that it was losing billions each year. Now, that's a tough thing to do, to run a business losing the B word every year. So to plug the leak, it's going to have to either find a way to keep raising capital or shrink itself. Last year, it tried to buy time for a plan that would lead to carving out its investment bank separate from the merchant bank. But time ran out as our banking issues spread. Now, it wasn't a story of garbage loans. Instead, it was just all the customers heading for the exits. Nobody believed in Credit Suisse anymore. So as a result, last weekend, the Swiss government said UBS, the entire name, UBS Group AG, agreed to take over its longtime rival. Now, UBS is also based in Switzerland. So the Swiss government said it would provide UBS $9 billion to backstop some losses that they might incur in taking over Credit Suisse. And the Swiss National Bank also provided more than $100 billion of liquidity, that to help UBS facilitate the deal. Now, UBS was not standing in line to do this. They weren't happy to do this at all, but they were pushed into the biggest banking deal in years by the regulators because they were eager to halt the dangerous decline in confidence in the global banking system. And again, it isn't necessarily based on anything wrong with the banks per se. It's just, oh, I'm taking out my money. Are you taking out your money? You know. Anyhow, so the deal between these big hitters of Swiss finance, it's the first mega merger of systematically important global banks since 2008. And all kinds of banks, as you may recall, were carved up and matched with rivals, often at the direction of regulators. Now, interestingly, at least in my little twisted head, during any normal time, this deal between UBS and Credit Suisse would have been an obvious antitrust red flag. Funny how the government can decide which rules to enforce when and to whom. It's just like wearing those masks in the bank now. You're not welcome as you were a couple years ago, you know. No, take off the mask. So, one major point of Credit Suisse's failure is that this bank has little in common with Silicon Valley Bank, SVB, or any of these other mid-sized U.S. banks that have gotten into trouble. SVB had a securities portfolio, their investment portfolio, with more than $15 billion in paper losses on the books. And Credit Suisse had unrealized losses on its, what they call, held-to-maturity securities, less than $50 million. That's like no meaningful figure. Now, I'd like the $50 million in my account to be no meaningful figure, but anyhow, when it comes to banks, it is. So here's the thing. SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, had all its investments in U.S. government securities. Highest quality, no default risk, will pay interest, and will pay off when due. So quality never an issue. The problem was that due to what seems to be a total lack, and this is my opinion, I don't think it's solo, but a total lack of risk management of their portfolio, either by the bank itself or even the San Francisco Fed, they did create over $15 billion in unrealized losses in what is referred to as those held-to-maturity portion of their assets. The reason it happened? Simple math. These particular hold-to-maturity assets, in other words, they're set aside to be in the account until they came due. Okay, that's reasonable. They do that stuff all the time. But the vast majority of their assets were all in one, if you will, maturity area, which is long-term, like 30-year paper. And to add insult to injury, they were all purchased when the interest rates were very low. Now, that's all cool as long as the rates remain low. But again, as you may have heard or read, rates have been rising over these past several months. And so there in math, at least bond math, there is a seesaw effect that comes into play with bond values. This is, again, on all types of bonds, regardless of their credit worthiness, regardless of their credit rating, regardless of issuer, they're all the same. See, bonds pay an interest, they have a due date, and so you know you can compare, and they have a credit rating. So you can compare, even though they come from different places, you can compare different bonds and say, okay, how much should this one be worth versus that one? So, as interest rates rise, on one hand, the price and therefore value of existing bonds will drop. Well, why is that? Again, nothing changes with the bond. The bonds pay interest. They will come due. You know, everything's good in that regard. But if interest rates are going up, why would I, as an investor, want to buy a 2% bond, for example, if now I can get even a 2.5% bond for the same money with the same maturity when it would come due? Well, you wouldn't. So what would happen is that those existing bonds will drop in price so that the offset in price equals a return for a full, what they call full coupon bond. In other words, whatever it is when it comes to the market. So the longer the time until a bond comes due, the bigger the downside effect on the price. So it's a big risk with low to no reward. Imagine yourself at the end of the crack the whip line. That's what happened to SVB. So, here's some final thoughts on the bank situation and some other commentary as well. Let me go back to this thing about bond values. See, it gets a little confusing for sure. But the thing to remember is there's a couple. The longer out you have a bond, and then the longer the time it has to mature, the more risk in price you have if interest rates go up subsequent to you making that investment. Conversely, it is a two-way street. As we saw from the 80s until probably 4 or 5 years ago. When interest rates come down, existing bond prices will go up. So it's not just, you know, some flim-flam deal. So understand then, if I'm this bank, excuse me, and I have all these bonds out there in 30-year maturities, and interest rates start going up, what's that going to do to my price? Drive them down pretty much. Yeah. So Credit Suisse's emergency merger with UBS will wipe out the banks, that is to say, riskiest bonds. And actually, Credit Suisse's chairman, a gentleman named Axel Lehman, said recent bank troubles that started here in the U.S., were too much to withstand. The collapse of the Silicon Valley Bank prompted investors all around the world to look for weak spots in the financial system. And Credit Suisse has been first on many lists of troubled institutions because it's been weakened by years of self-inflicted scandals and trading losses. Now, just a few years ago, Deutsche Bank, now we've changed countries, Germany's top lender, was the sick man of European banking. It's in better shape now. Last year, their net profit was about $6.1 billion, highest since 2007. And that is pretty contrary to the $8 billion in net losses at Credit Suisse. So Deutsche Bank is benefiting from the higher interest rates. So let me reiterate, Deutsche Bank resembles neither Credit Suisse nor Silicon Valley Bank. On the surface, Deutsche Bank's core business looks stronger, but its overall numbers are dragged down by what they call their capital release unit. This was a bad bank. It created to wind down unwanted assets, kind of a thing off to the side that they had to maintain for unwanted assets back at that time. In a sector where a nervous market can turn a low valuation into a self-fulfilling prophecy, Deutsche Bank were coming back to haunt it. George Ball, who's president at an investment firm called Sanders Morris Harris, he added that Deutsche Bank is, quote, very sound financially, unquote. It could be crippled if there's a loss of confidence and if there's a run on the bank. He added, there is no fundamental reason why that should occur other than nervousness. You know, most people think banks run on money. And sure, they do. I mean, you can go there and you can get some if you have some there in the first place. But in reality, excuse me, just like our currency, just like, investments and a lot of other things, it runs on confidence. And if that's gone, the game's over. It really wouldn't matter how much the Swiss National Bank threw at the problem, because without confidence, it's never going to be enough. You know, that phrase, perceptions are reality. That's what I think's been going on around here. You know, the media has decided that banks are in trouble across the board without delineating between what type, what kind, where, any of that. And so people are beating feet for the exits for, in my opinion, no good reason in most cases. Because most of the banks, certainly that you would deal with in this particular, for lack of a better phrase, market area, are in good shape. I have no hesitation in saying that. Now, if they blow up, it wasn't my fault, I promise. But there's nothing there. This is a lot of conjecture and what if and maybe and could and all that stuff. And again, being tarred by the same brush. But again, it still comes back to perceptions are reality. You're not going to put your life savings somewhere if you're not 100% confident that it's going to be there when you need it. Folks who are holding uninsured deposits, that's code for deposits more than $250,000, at regional banks are nervous, and the banking system is based on competence and trust. Now, on Tuesday, we had a big uprun in the market. And it was led by the bank stocks because Janet Yellen said that the Fed could, operative term, could step in to protect depositors at other banks if regulators see a risk of additional runs. Now, the comments came after the Fed regulators used emergency powers to guarantee those uninsured deposits at both SVB and the Signature Bank. She added that our intervention was necessary to protect the broader U.S. banking system, and similar actions could be warranted if smaller institutions suffered the deposit runs. But again, it's all about confidence. You know, without confidence, these banks aren't going to run. And it's hard not to have some sympathy for the Credit Suisse guys. They just made every mistake they probably could. But a better way to look at this is to say banking jitters may have the actual potential to do what everyone incorrectly has believed the Fed rate hikes would do, and that is they could slow lending and economic growth, further tamping down the inflation rate. Rate hikes didn't, and in our view, weren't likely to do this. They would argue that they would presume that Fed funds rate is the price of money. So, interestingly, global central banks have not seen any dash for dollars after uniting with the Fed to ease access to supplies of U.S. currency. Now, if there were really problems, there'd be people from all over the world beating feet to the U.S. dollar saying, save me, because they would see concerns in their own market. But that hasn't been happening. Will Robbins, who is a Capital Group portfolio manager and a former banking analyst, Capital Group is the firm that runs the American funds. He said he remains confident in the overall health of the U.S. banking system, that it's strong. He believes it will simply take time for turbulence to subside, and I think Will's on it in that regard. Regulators have acted swiftly to contain the panic among regional bank investors, he noted, and larger banks have stepped in to help fund the rescue efforts. He added, we've been here before. He's covered the bank industry for more than 30 years. He said, this is an old-fashioned bank run. Going to be messy. Going to take a while to sort things out. But I think we're well-positioned to get through it. And even the large banks haven't been immune to trader skittishness. Shares of the big U.S. banks have also fallen, as again, investors worry about the global banking system. It's a groupthink thing. If that bank is bad, then maybe this bank is bad. That is spurious logic, to put it mildly. To the extent that bank jitters slow the pace of rates, yeah, maybe that helps sentiment. Everybody says the Fed's bailing out banks right now, but maybe in reality the banks are bailing out the Fed. Maybe their heightened risk aversion will finally make the Fed look like it has some control over the borrowing and will enable everyone to move on. So, that is that on the banks. I would not be, again, I can't say it enough times, please don't be concerned about your local banking relationships. These folks, even if they're out-of-town headquartered, are not the business of taking advantage of their customers. And even when the other bank, SVB, they were just stupid. Forgive me, but that's pretty much it in a nutshell. They were just stupid. So, George Ball is president of Sanders Morris Harris Investment Firm. He says, I think the market overall is neither frightened nor optimistic. It's simply confused. The price action for the last month and a half, including today, is a jumble without any direction or conviction. Amen, George. That's exactly what's going on. And that's why you're seeing volatility. See, and again, as I said at the top, the market is up basically since this end of the year, and that's probably a surprise to most people, because all that the media is doing is thumping the world is ending drum. Well, I hope we'll be back next week with positive news, but thank you very much for listening, and dare I say it, go Zags. Let's put the UConn's in the rearview mirror tonight. Thank you very much for listening, folks. My name is Mike Mayle. I'm with the Opus 111 Group, and you've been listening to Money Management.
Join us again next Saturday morning at this same time for the financial insight, opinion, and perspective of Money Management with Opus 111's Mike Mayle. Have a question or comment? Email us at info@opus111group.com or visit our website, opus111group.com. Sections of this radio show contain forward-looking statements that are not guarantees of future performance. This information is from sources we believe to be reliable. However, we cannot guarantee that it is accurate or complete. These comments are for informational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice, nor as a recommendation to buy or sell any security or investment product mentioned in this show. Investing involves risks, and past performance is not indicative of future results. Individual circumstances do vary. Please consult an investment professional prior to making any investment decisions.